Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
So today, let's do it again. And this time, the track is this.
After all, I really love you. After all that we've been through.
One of the greats, no question about it. Paul, how you doing? Are you all right?
Very good, Dave. How are you?
I'm very good indeed. Paul Lennon it is. And how's Ashley these days?
Great.
Yeah, good. Glad to hear. Not a bother at all. We're talking Frank and Walters here. So I might as well start off then if we're talking classic song and all the rest of it. When was the song written, Paul?
I think the song would have been written probably sometime in 92.
And were you in London at the time?
Well, actually, I was. Half of the song was written in London and the other half was written in Cork. So yep. I wrote the verse and the bridge in Cork, and then I wrote the chorus and the middle eight in London.
And you stuck it all together and brought it to the band.
That's the way I always write songs. I specifically won't write a song in one day, because I always find that the chorus just becomes like an extension of the verse and it doesn't have an identity of its own.
Yeah.
So I do it intentionally like that way.
Okay, so no drums or strings or anything, but it was Colm O'Callaghan, who's working here now in RT these days. He was Satanta. Did he advise you to do something about how to improve it?
Yeah, well, I played at the Colm because he was working with Satanta at the time, and what I had was at the time, I had the verse, bridge and the chorus, which is the bada ba bit. And he said, you know what, Paul, you might be better off doing lyrics there for that. And I said, yeah, I'll give it a go. So I did that. And then I played for him again. And then he says, the song needs a middle eight. So he said, would you go away and write a middle eight as well? So I said, yeah, I did that. And basically, that's how the song was born then, in its essence.
Yeah, I didn't realise that Colm had so much to do with it. In other words, like, you did it all, but he was the one who cracked a whip to some extent, right?
Yeah, Colm, yeah. Like, Colm, he produced our very, I think one of our early demos. I think it was maybe our third demo.
All right.
He's not a lot of knowledge about music.
Yeah,
know,
he does.
Production and stuff, yeah. Like, so. We're very, very grateful to him.
Okay, I mean, can I ask what's the song about? Or is it, it's just a love song, really? I mean, I mean that in a good way.
yeah, it's a love song, but it's a kind of a love song. It's where you kind of, sometimes we kind of take each other for granted in relationships, and this song is just kind of about realising, you know, what you have and kind of like celebrating what you have, you know, and that's kind of really... You know, I think in all relationships go through their ups and downs, but at the end of the day, we love each other, you know, and that's the kind of message behind it, really.
And what are we looking about Frank and Walters here in terms of, like, are we sort of 88 to whatever, 2002 maybe and beyond? Like, I mean, I know you've had loads of albums and all that since, but I mean, in terms of being with a record label and doing all that stuff and, you know, generally being out there and touring and all the rest.
Well, we're still doing the same thing.
Yeah.
We've never really stopped, you know. But like we probably don't do as much touring as we used to, you know. But we continue to write albums. We've written like 7 albums now,
yeah.
You know, all together. So I couldn't give up, to be honest. Which I just. Like, you know, songwriting for me is a form of therapy. So it's kind of, it keeps me sane.
I suppose in one way what I'm really saying is that, like, you mean you were able to make money and do the touring and all the rest up to about, like, I don't know, maybe, you know, 2004 or 5 or whatever. And then it just changes, doesn't it? I mean, like, you've all got jobs now and you can still make music and you can still tour.
Yeah. We can. It's not as full time as it used to be. All right, yeah. And it's, you know, but we love it. Like, you know.
Just as a matter of interest, are you teaching songwriting from Crosshaven these days?
No.
Did you ever do that?
I used to do a little bit of it. All right, yeah, but I don't do it anymore.
All right. Know? Okay.
Yeah.
Now,
I had a son there about 6 years ago. So, you know, he kind of, he put a stop to any kind of teaching or anything that I had to be doing.
Okay, you know? Well, then let's take a look at just, I mean, from the end of the 80s and when it all came together and the first EPs and all the rest of it, because this was part of the first bunch, really. I mean, Happy Busman and all the rest of it. And then there was, I mean, I could have picked here, This Is Not a Song. I could have picked Fashion Crisis, It's New York, of all the early stuff. But After All seems to have... I mean, I presume The Young Offenders brought it right back up there in terms of people Spotifying and all the rest, did it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was like, it's kind of the song that kind of keeps giving, you know. It's like, you know, it's just constantly played, and people, it just seems to have that kind of longevity in it, you know. People like it up to the present date. And like, we're very grateful to that the Young Offenders use it as well. So, because we were kind of opened up to a new audience, and a lot of younger people now kind of have got into the Frank and Walters because of it. So we've, you know, a lot more people coming to our shows and stuff like that. So it's been handy.
It's been handy, is it? And I'm sure an awful lot of people have said, oh, this is our wedding song. I'm sure it has been, has it?
Yeah, there's loads of people. There's loads of people have used it as their wedding songs. I don't know how many people are after telling me, you know, that they wanted it as their wedding song. And we were recently asked to play in a church, actually, for as the wedding song, you know. So next year or sometime.
And you're going to do it, are you?
Yeah, we actually are. Good. Yeah, and I can't say who it is, but it's someone who works in RTE. Actually, it's a relation of theirs. Believe
really?
It or not.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. That's a very good choice then. Okay, so Paul, let's take a look, because a lot of people don't necessarily know that certain things about the Frank and Walters, which I just find fantastic. I mean, when it's all started first, like we were playing them off the air, just brilliant stuff. You know, in fact, in those days, you needed. Kind of, I don't know, like nighttime radio. You needed the music magazines, neither of which, I presume, are the most important thing now, are they?
Yeah, I suppose back then what you needed was kind of, you needed a record company, you know, to kind of...
It was all about getting a deal, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah. I mean, if you didn't have the money, like from the record company, you couldn't advertise, you know, that you had a gig in Sheffield or something like that, you know, on the NME or you know, the Melody Maker, so people wouldn't really know you were playing. So it's a completely different ball game now, because you know, with social media, that, you know, you just advertise your gigs on social media, and you know, people come. But yeah, it's, I suppose nowadays it's kind of, I think a lot of bands have kind of got a good chance of kind of competing, you know, and kind of making a name for themselves through social media.
Yeah, oh no, absolutely. Yeah. I'd argue that one, though. I don't think it's like, I mean, if you're able to have a sort of a thing of going to get the deal and all the rest of it, and then it all kind of, you know, goes to wherever it's going to go, and you get the tours going and all the rest. And Napster came along 20 years ago and did disrupt everything, to the point where I know an awful lot of bands are saying, oh yeah, but it's democratic now, you know, everybody has the same chance. Yeah, I know. But I mean, like, when you see the money coming back from Spotify, you know, it wouldn't pay for your breakfast, would it?
Oh no, it wouldn't. But I'm just saying that I'm just looking at it from, you know, every band, a band kind of starting out now, you know, and you know, they have a chance to get some sort of exposure.
Yeah.
Whereas there were so many bands when we were starting out, and you know, they kind of didn't even make it out of the practice room. You know, it's kind of, but now you can record cheaply in your bedroom. And you can put your stuff up on social media and off you go, and you have that platform. Whereas, I mean, there was so many brilliant bands that I remember in Cork years ago that they just didn't get a break. You know, they just didn't get a break, and then they lost the kind of morale. You know, and the morale suffered, and then they broke up. Do you know what I mean? That's what happens.
Absolutely. Well, when the Frank and Walters were starting out and all that early stuff, as I say, with This Is Not a Song and Fashion Crisis Hits New York and the song we're talking about here, After all at that same time, you were touring all over the place. And the two of the great points about that is, number one, you had Suede as your support band, but more importantly, you did a full tour and your support band was a group called Radiohead. That's
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
when you did the stuff on stage, and then Radiohead went on first, obviously, there was support, and then you played the full tour, 13 or 20 dates, whatever it was. Mm. And would they be kind of looking at you? I know one of the things that Tom York was always really like delighted about, and in fact, I believe he still carries it on now, which is that an awful lot of support bands had to pay to be on support, and you didn't in any way want to charge a band to be playing the same bill as you. And Radiohead have taken that up. Isn't that the case?
I think so, yeah. Well, what actually happened at that time, there was a few other bands that wanted the tour, you know, to tour with us, and they were actually offering us money, but we kind of turned it down, because at the time we had kind of toured with Carter, the Unstoppables, Sex Machine, and also the Inspiral Carpets and the Blue Airplanes. We never had to pay, you know, so we just thought, like, I suppose we were just carrying on from that. It wouldn't be fair, you know, to be charging people. So we just picked a band. I remember we were actually making the video for This Is Not a Song in Salzburg, and there was an NME journalist with us at the time, and he played us Creep, and it was like a week later our agent said this band Radiohead would like to support you, is that okay? And we said, yeah, great, we heard the song Creep, brilliant. So and that was it.
And did you get on well with them? Like, do you remember being on the road? Yeah,
we did. Yeah, they were very nice. Yeah. They were very nice, very very nice altogether. In fairness, like they were sound. I remember being in Oxford one time, and they were.
That's their hometown.
Yeah, we would play with them in Oxford, and I remember being backstage with them, and they were just kind of having a kind of existential crisis, saying, you know, they were thinking that, you know, they were going nowhere. And I had been talking to an NME journalist previous, and he was saying how brilliant they were. And I said, they were kind of, and I was saying, lads, cheapers, you're amazing. Like, do you know what I mean? What are you worried about? You have everything. You have everything. It's like that song alone, Creep, like, we'll see through the rest of your lives.
We just heard earlier on that they don't want to play it anymore. At least they don't want to play it much. They're kind of back playing it a bit now, all right, yeah, since they've been all so right, successful down through the years. And Suede as well, you're on tour with. And also Top of the Pops. Can you remember who was on Top of the Pops the week that you were on?
On the night that we were on, there was, the big one was Paul McCartney.
Right.
And then there was, I think there was Jesus Jones was there.
Oh, yeah.
And do you know what? I can't remember.
Did you meet Paul at all? Did you?
We did, yeah. We did. We met Paul. He was, his dressing room was directly across from ours. And us being Beatles fans, like, I had to give him a hug and tell him that I loved him.
I can see it now, yeah.
Yeah, but no, and we met Linda, and like she tried to convince us to be vegetarians, but we weren't having any of it. Well, I think my brother did all right. He became a vegetarian afterwards, all right. But she was saying to me, actually, she said, do you know what? A cow dies for you know, every time you eat a burger, you know. And I said, what about the cow dying for your leather shoes that you have on you? And she got embarrassed.
Did she?
They were actually leather shoes that she had on her. Paul was wearing vegetarian Doc Martens, all right. So he was okay. but she said, oh my God, I'll have to have a word with my wardrobe. That's very bad, you know.
Didn't realise he was making such a big mistake. All right. Yeah. By the way, if anybody has a question, I don't think I can last any longer. I want to ask Paul. 51552 is the text. Just a few things then about all of this thing. Like, you know, in the last bunch of years, still albums around the world. Like, I mean, you were in Japan and places, weren't you? In America, even recently. Yeah. Well, I mean, up in the last 10 years, haven't you?
Yeah, we were. Yeah, we played in Japan in, I think, 2012. We did it. We finally got to Japan. It was like it was great, because the fans have been waiting 20 years for us, like, you know, because we actually sold most of our records. The first record, our first album, was the biggest sales were in Japan, believe it or not. But you know, our record company, you know, they had were kind of focusing on us playing all over England, you know.
Yeah.
And there was no there was no tour of Japan. We should have went to Japan, you know, back then,
When you talk about the other bands and that in Cork, I mean, wasn't the Enemy and all that would say, like, you know, Corkchester, they tried to make it look like there was loads of bands coming out and this is the next place, like after Minneapolis or after, I don't know, Nirvana, yeah, kind of whatever, yeah.
Mm.
So, like, there were a bunch of bands. You were working, you partnered with Edwin Collins around the time you were supporting Carter USM, isn't that right?
That's right, yeah. Well, Edwin kind of produced our first album, and he actually helped produce After All as well. And we're kind of obviously very grateful to him as well for his input on After All. And he, when the album was released first, it was Edwin's version was what you hear.
All right.
And then we, our record company asked us to re-record After All to try to see if we can get it a bit better. And they suggested Ian Brody from the Lightning Seeds, and we went with him, and Ian then kind of brought it on to another level again. So it was like just the icing on the cake. I mean, it's amazing, like, what both Edwin brought to the song and then what Ian Brody brought to it. So it's just, and of course with Ian Brody then we had the engineer Cenzo Townsend, and he was a phenomenal engineer. Like, we learned so much from him, and his recording on the song, the production on the song is unreal, you know, in my opinion. Like, it was just leaps beyond any other thing on the album, you know, as regards just production, you know, from a sonic perspective.
You also worked with Gus Dudgeon, of course, with the Grand Parade album, like, who's well known for all the Elton John stuff. Like, I mean, he did, like, your song on Broken Big in America with all of that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. I think he did Space Odyssey as well.
Yeah, I think he probably Odyssey, did, yeah. Yeah, that's
yeah,
right,
he
yeah.
Did, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. But, he was a nice man, but he was kind of prone to stealing the dessert of the engineer and stuff like that. He was... I know that sounds a bit strange, but he was just one of those fellas who had a piano toy, you know, one of those kind of producers that just probably in the production game for too long, you know,
yeah,
in the pop world for too long, you know. It was like, he was a strange kind of man, like, but he was nice. But we used to, when he was recording the album, we used to kick his guitar or kick his car with a football down the car park, and just to annoy him, so he could come down, and he'd have to come down and turn off the alarm.
The Gus Dudgeon story. There's one here, yeah, that says, by the way, we are talking to Paul Linehan from the Frank and Walters, and we're looking at a classic song, which is After All. So I'll get back to that in a second. But there's one here that says, are there any plans to reissue the first few albums on vinyl, with the likes of Whipping Boy, Therapy, My Bloody Valentine, Revelino, and Curb Dog all having done so in the last 12 months? That's from Connor.
Yeah, but you know what? Before the pandemic, we had planned, and we have the artwork and everything is ready to make a vinyl box set of all the albums.
Right.
So it's all in place. But kind of when the pandemic kind of came along, we could put it onto the back boiler.
You know, you did release.
We'll get it going again.
Yeah, but you did release a kind of a best of thing around 2005. I don't know when it was actually, but it was called Souvenirs. It was a retrospective triple album.
That's right. Yeah, it was kind of. It was like a lot of stuff in it.
That sounds like a lot of stuff, all right. Yeah.
It was kind of B-sides and C-sides and stuff like that, kind of rare kind of stuff that you kind of couldn't get, like, so there's kind of cover versions all sorts of stuff like that. It was.
Do you have in your possession an I'm Billy Murphy t-shirt by any chance?
Is that a question?
Yeah, that's a question.
No, but I want one. If the hairy babies are listening.
The hairy babies are in Cork, aren't they? Are they? Yeah. Yeah, right, okay. Well, then maybe they are. I don't know.
They might mail me one.
So when you saw the finale of Young Offenders, did you feel it just, wow, it fit so well. It was just perfect.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I the song just fitted so well to the scene. I was just wondering, like, did Peter Foote kind of did he have it written before he heard the song, you know, or before he chose the song, or did he kind of just, you know, alter it to suit the song? Because it was just so it was just so fitting for the scene. It was just everything in the story kind of led to that, and it kind of, you know, it just it was kind of it was moving, you know. When all, you know, the girl who was pregnant, you know, with Jock's child and that, like, and what's his name, the other fellow, Jock, oh jeez, I can't think of Jock and what, Connor.
I can't remember Connor.
Connor. He was kissing his girlfriend for the first time, like, and all that. It was just kind of, you know, it was just, it was moving, you know. It just seemed to work so well. But also, what I do think is that they done an amazing job on it.
Yeah.
I think the harmonies that they brought out in it, and kind of like the a cappella kind of version of it, it was fantastic.
And when you play the song on stage, it's Frank and Walters, I presume the audience sings it all, do they?
Yeah, they would, a good bit of it, like, you know. So, here's the chorus.
Here's the text here. And by the way, again, the chorus, like, when I'm far from home and lonely is what, like, I mean, you wrote this in your mother's house in Cork, you say, but did you write any of the lyrics when you were away in London?
I would have written the chorus. The choruses were written in London, and the verses and the bridges were written in Cork.
Right.
Like, both the melody, the chords, and the lyrics, like, they were written in different places.
Right. What was I going to say? There's a few questions here. It says, hey Dave, is Paul into any Irish bands at the moment? Cheers.
Yes, I am. actually, I'm on my way to Doolin. I'm playing there in Hotel Doolin tonight, and I'm with one of the most talented musicians in the country. And his name is Dylan Ho from a band called Rowan. I don't know if you know them,
Rowan.
Dave, but yeah, Rowan. They're probably one of the most talented bands I've ever come across, you know.
And that's tonight in the Hotel Doolin, yeah?
Yeah, but he's actually accompanying me. I'm playing an acoustic gig, so Dylan plays keyboards for us, the band, from time to time.
Yeah, can I just mention something about keyboards there? Because Songs for the Walking Wounded, was that the first time you had synths on an album back in 2016, or did you have it before that? I can't remember.
No, we did. We had a whole album full of synths.
Yeah, you did. That's right.
Glass.
Yeah, right. Now that one, you also had We Are the Young Men, isn't that right? That was, I don't know what year that was. That was about 10 years ago, maybe?
No, that was on Songs for the Walking Wounded.
All right, okay, yeah. And Souvenirs, Grand Parade. I'm just trying to remember the albums. I can't remember them all. Yeah,
and I'm just to call them all.
Who? What? Yeah, go on. Yeah, go on. Can you do it from beginning to end?
I will. So, the Trains, Boats, and Planes.
Yes.
Grand Parade.
Yes.
Beauty Becomes More Than Life.
Yeah. Three.
Glass.
Four.
A renewed interest in happiness.
Five,
Greenwich Mean Time,
six,
and Songs for the Walking Wounded.
Fantastic. Well done. Yeah. Okay.
Which is where I was in the band.
Yeah, right. Ask Paul, why do they wear orange shirts when they're gigging? Why do you wear orange shirts when you're gigging, Paul?
Okay. It kind of started off in the early days when we were kind of Beatles fans, and because they had a uniform, which was where they all wore the same, we decided to do that as well. So we kind of bought kind of outlandish kind of costumes to make some kind of a fashion statement back in the early 90s. So a part of that was that we had orange polo necks, and after they kind of rotted around probably 1998, we decided to just change our kind of uniform, and we just decided to get shirts, and we just it's like orange kind of. In our heads, orange is our colour, you know. So we just
in our heads, orange is our colour. Okay, well, listen. Finally, but I just want to say you've got a three arena gig coming up, right? Tell me about that.
Yeah, that's the Fela Classical gig.
Yeah.
It'll be in the three arena, it's Thursday anyway. Is that the 27th?
It's 27 and 28th of December. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of a lot of the bands that would have played in Fela back in the 90s.
The Four of Us,
together.
Something Happens, Hot House Flares, etc. Yeah.
Yeah. And Emotional Fish.
Yeah.
And we're just kind of doing this gig. We did it about 3 years ago in Thurles, in Semple Stadium again. And this is just the whole thing revisited in Dublin, and it's with the Irish Chamber Orchestra
Did I say December? Sorry, 28th of October. It's a few weeks away, right?
28th of October, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, well, listen, I'll go. Paul, thanks a million for talking to us this Sunday afternoon. Enjoy yourself tonight in Doolin, right?
Thanks a lot.
Good man yourself. Take it easy. Paul Linehan it is. And here's the song itself that we're talking about. Frank and Walters, After All.
Dave Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.